Good evening. My name is Alan Rigg. I'm the president of 8020 Sales Performance, and I have the privilege of being the host of the How to Increase Sales During an Economic Downturn teleseminar series. Our guest this evening is Sharon Drew Morgan. Sharon Drew is a visionary and thought leader, speaker, consultant, trainer, and developer of a collaborative decision-making method called buying facilitation. She's also the author of the New York Times business bestseller, Selling with Integrity, and five other books on a new sales paradigm that gives sellers the tools to teach buyers how to buy. Sharon Drew teaches and licenses her decision-making model to global corporations and designs learning-based training programs to ensure sellers, negotiators, coaches, and managers learn how to help buyers, colleagues, client, and staff make their own best decisions collaboratively. She lives in Austin, Texas, and is a dancer and intense film buff when not working. Sharon Drew, welcome to the call.
Hi, Alan. Nice being with you.
Well, it's certainly a pleasure to have you here. I want to jump right into this because I know you have some very interesting things to say that may sound different to our audience. So the first question is, what do you think is the difference between selling in a robust economy and a failing economy?
It's massively different, and the problem, I think, comes from the sales model itself, because our product is the same in any economy, our pitch and presentation is the same, and the buyer's need is the same. What's different is the decision-making process that the buyers need to go through. As sellers, we have a tendency to gather data about needs and their solution needs, and see how it matches our product. But in this economy, we don't know if they have a problem that's so intense that it needs to be resolved now, or the economy has in some way mitigated the types of solutions they seek. And if we enter the sales process the same way, we will delve into our normal habits of trying to figure out needs and trying to place the product. But for all we know, they could have a problem that can be fixed internally or partially or with something that's not quite so good but is cheaper for the moment and is an interim fix. So do our clients wait until they figure out if their business is going to be at risk? Do our clients go ahead anyway? We don't know what their criteria are. And sales has a very bad habit of just focusing on what looks like the need.
Okay. Now, many sales methodologies do talk about trying to uncover decision criteria, but it sounds like what you're saying is that maybe those methods don't go as deeply as they need to or get into as much detail as they need to. Can you clarify the difference?
Well, first I would like to say that the fact that people are even talking about decisions is wonderful to my ears, and I'd like to think that I had something to do with bringing that in. I've been writing books about it and kneeling and screaming and begging about it and talking about it for 25 years. And I'll tell you, even 5 years ago, people weren't even talking about decisions, and it's something that's finally come in, maybe from all my books and my 1,000 articles. So I'd like to think I had something to do with that, and I'm quite pleased with it. What sellers do is find out the decision criteria around the product purchase.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that buyers live, let me just take this in general now, we can get into the specifics of how to handle this in the economy, but in general, buyers have, just like all of us do, a very unique internal environment that's made up of idiosyncratic rules and unconscious relationship issues and historic problems or resolutions or historic vendors. We all live in a conscious and unconscious world that has existed well before this present moment. When there's a problem that we have, whether it's an individual or a client, that problem is maintained daily by the rules and roles and the people and relationships involved in the status quo. Right? Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense.
We have a workaround. I tell this funny story of a cold call I made, and I was talking to the gatekeeper, and she said, you can call back any time this week, but make sure you don't call after 2. And I jokingly said, what does he do, come back from lunch drunk every day? And she said, yes. Now, that sounded odd to me, but the biggest question I had was, why are they keeping him around? Mm-hmm. So I said to her, boy, he must really be good in the morning. And she said, he's wonderful in the morning. So they built their whole structure in terms of meetings with the guy's expertise around the fact that he's drunk from 2 to 5 every day. But that was built into the system, and they had already designed a workaround. Mm-hmm. So a recruitment officer who came in trying to unseat this guy would be doing something that was not something the buyer needed because they'd already created a workaround. We create workarounds, and then everything looks normal. Everything looks fine. And by the time a buyer recognizes there's a need, what they have not recognized is the entire structure that holds this problem in place that would need to be reconfigured in some way so that there's no damage when the need is resolved. So sellers have been asking about the decision-making around the problem,
mm-hmm.
not around the entire system or structure that holds that problem in place daily and would need to be resolved. The other thing I want to say about that briefly is just because I know how you decide to wear your hair doesn't necessarily mean that I can affect change in terms of how you make a new decision. Because I know how a buyer decides does not mean that I can get them to make a different decision. We're, as sellers, we've been working from the outside in, and everything we do basically is push. And us understanding what a buyer needs, how a buyer decides, doesn't help them decide to choose us. That material is necessary in the second phase of sales, where they are actually placing product. But I consider sales to be a two-phased process. One is the decision phase, where the buyer has all kinds of buying decisions to make that have to do with their system and environment. And then the product decision phase, where sales comes in. We can talk about that later once I talk about with you the new buying criteria for this gloomy economy.
Please proceed.
Okay. In terms of new buying criteria, I suggest that there be a shift in focus to help the buyer figure out how they're going to move forward with the decisions they need to make. So I'm suggesting a decision support focus because I think the way we've been selling until now, what sales is and does, is moot. Needs analysis is moot here. They need you. They need your product. They need your solution. But they need an additional level of buy-in from their teammates before they can spend money. So it's not about who or what or how much anymore. It's actually about when or if. Their final solution is not their criteria. I think preserving assets might be their final criteria at this particular moment. Hopefully this is going to shift soon.
So you feel that there's even more involvement by other people in the decision process than there might be during up economic times?
Absolutely. That's one of the things that I'm going to talk about now.
Okay.
Until the buyer's entire decision team agrees to take action together, no action will be taken. Mm-hmm. So the regular contact that a seller has, who may be their driver, the driver in the decision to purchase the product, there's now a larger buying decision team because any decisions have to include the corporate economic factors. The risk is too high for anyone to make decisions without agreement from the team. So if the seller helps the buyer or their driver or their coach bring together their entire decision team quickly, even if the ultimate solution cannot be to purchase the product at this time, there is a greater likelihood of a quick decision to act. The action might not be the one you prefer, but you might not have a choice. At least it'll put you in high regard with the buying decision team. Additionally, another point is that until the entire decision team recognizes that it would make economic sense to resolve all the problems using an external solution, no action will be taken. until now, they've been resolving their problem less effectively anyway. It's just like this man who's only working part of a day because he's drunk is obviously a less effective solution to having someone around with brains, but they've already built that in. So our buyers resolve the problem in some way less effectively anyway, and at this point, there's a case to be made for continuing the status quo until the economy gets stable. So if a seller can help the decision team evaluate the differences between the cost and results of continuing doing what they've been doing until now versus the human cost, the political cost, the organizational cost, the time cost, and the money cost of reorganizing around a new solution and keep as many of the people involved now with the status quo involved, you become part of the buyer's decision team. And if the client sees that all the costs can be mitigated or seen in a way that overrides their economic concerns and actually leaves them better off, they'll be able to choose to make a purchase now. But they need to understand the full picture of givens. So that will include their people systems, not just the financial ones and the problem-oriented ones. The last idea I'd like to put forth is that until buyers figure out the immediate needs that must be addressed, and, you know, when they start off, they don't know what the immediate needs are because it might look like there's a problem that needs to be resolved, but an immediate need might be a staffing need, for example. Until they figure out what they are, the most immediate needs, they will take no action. So it might mean that they need a temporary solution rather than a product purchase or something to do with an old vendor. If you can help the buyers actually figure out their immediate needs, whether it be staffing or outsourcing or even using a competitor, and the appropriate choices using the criteria they must work from, separate from focusing on a product sale, you will be in line as the first vendor they'll connect with once they decide to purchase a product.
Mm-hmm.
So the three things that I'm advocating are, one, help the buyer work with their larger decision team because until they all reach agreement, nothing will happen. Two, they have to figure out how it makes economic sense to use an external solution and understand all of the costs, all of the costs. And three, understand what the immediate needs are and see what parts of those needs can be managed with some sort of solution separate from the product sale. So those are the three highlighted items that I would recommend that sellers now begin focusing on through this economic downturn.
When you talk about working with the larger decision team, does that team come into play with decisions that are of a certain size for investments of a certain magnitude? Or are we starting
no.
to see them intrude on just about any decision?
It intrudes. I like the way you use the word intrude. It comes into play in any decision at all. If your wife told you that your grown kids were coming back and spending a month with you and that you needed extra chairs since you've moved and you've got a smaller place for yourselves, your kids are out of the house, if you had to buy a chair, one chair, and it was $49, you could do it. You would not need a larger decision team. But if you went to the store and they told you that you had to buy four instead of the two that you needed, and they were $150 each, and you were going to have to buy a full set of four. They couldn't give you two. You'd probably say, I'll call you back. And you'd go home to your wife and say, do we need to spend the extra $300? Do we need to move the table? Is there room for the four chairs? Do we need to move the credenza? Should we move the dining into the porch for now? It's summer. And the kids can do that, and we can use the bench out there. You'll have a different range of decisions to make, and your wife is going to be part of it, and you might come up with a different solution. So if it's cheap and easy and does not affect any internal structure, it's an easy personal decision. Once any decision involves other people, it involves the status quo, it involves change with other departments, other people, other software, other vendors. Once it involves anything else, the decision team always is involved. And even though it seems like you're going to have one driver, one coach, one buyer, it never happens. I was working with a golf cart GPS system group. I was doing some phone calls for them, and I sat down with this student, and he said, there's only one decision maker here, but I haven't been able to get him on board, although we've been friends for the past year, and I talk to him every month, but he's not doing anything. I said, how can you be sure there's only one decision maker? He said, no, I know this guy for sure. So I called the man, and I said, hi, my name is Sharon Drew Morgan, and I'm a trainee with this company. I hope you don't mind that I might be asking some questions that your buddy Bill here has been asking you for a year. I hope you have patience with me. And I said, so he's been talking to you about this for a year. What has stopped you from either ending the conversation or making a purchase until now? And he said, I would love to buy this thing, but the grounds guy is telling me that he's going to have all these carts that don't work anymore because these GPS systems seem to always fall down, and then we have to send the cart in, and we have to send it back, and we can't use it. And so he's the one that would have to take care of that stuff, and he's really not, he doesn't want to do that. He's got too much else to do. And the owner of the company is afraid that they'll be down so often that he's going to have less carts for his people. So he's talking about maybe having half with the GPS and half with the old system so that they don't fall apart. And so I've been fighting with these two guys for a year, and I can't get very far. My student was shocked that there were other decision makers involved. But there were other parts of the system that were managed that my student's prospect could not manage. There are always larger decision teams, and salespeople are so focused on the solution and on the problem solving and on the needs analysis that they don't recognize that the entire system that holds the status quo in place in some way has to be discussed. So, yes, you have to talk to your wife about the table and the credenza and the lighting, which has nothing to do with the great chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And my student had to talk with the groundskeeper and the owner because it had nothing to do with the placement of the cart per se. They had to figure out how to understand to make sense of replacement carts, or the software, or what do people do if their cart breaks down. They had other systems issues that had to be managed. So it's always about the decision, and the last thing we do is place the product. And sales has done us a disservice by focusing on the product resolution.
That's really interesting because I would imagine that people that sell a comprehensive software product like an enterprise resource planning system are probably acquainted with having to understand all of these impacts across an organization because their product deals with the entire organization. But I would imagine that 95, 98, 99% of salespeople have never really thought that far upstream and downstream because they look at their product as being a point solution.
I understand. I'm going to give you a couple of stories. I was working with Unisys in Europe several years ago. And one of the guys called me one day and said, could you please call this large bank? I won't name it. They gave us the agreement. We won the bid for a $30 million electronic banking solution. We know all the C-level people. We go out to dinner with them or beer with them once a month. We've done small projects with them. And we know all the techies, the users. We know the environment. We know the software. Excuse me. Why aren't they going forward? I mean, it's costing them $500 million a year, and we're 2 years out, so it costs them $1 billion, a billion with a B, $1 billion to not institute this solution. What is going on here? So they set up a meeting with me and the CEO of the bank, and within 12 minutes of me using my buying facilitation model, this man discovered there was this unconscious remembering that there was a three-year-old union guy problem from the last CEO. And until that whole thing was managed, it involved 17 other people around Europe. It was this whole complex, convoluted problem. But until they managed that, they could not move forward. Now, my clients were five senior partners at Unisys. They were getting paid humongous sums of money. They were not stupid. They knew everything about electronic banking. They knew everything about the placement of the software. They knew everything about the competition. They knew all the different kinds of software. They knew how the managers were going to relate with the techies and so forth. You can't get to a three-year-old union problem from there.
Mm-hmm.
So even with the large placements, the large products, they don't know all of the decisions that need to be made because they're not part of the system. We can take smaller products as well.
Well, before you go on, this is
okay.
I'd like to delve down a little bit because
right.
It sounds like part of the issue here is that the CEO of the bank didn't even know why the decision wasn't getting
right.
made until you helped him figure that out.
One of the interesting problems that I've discovered is that a system exists as it is. So I can say to you, Alan, in terms of your health, is there anything about your health that you should probably be doing better? Should you be working out more? Should you be eating healthier? Anything like that? Should you be losing weight? Is there anything like that that you might consider that you might want to be doing?
And I don't feel obligated to answer that question, of course.
Okay, so, but seriously, so we can look at that, and we know we should be eating healthier.
Mm-hmm.
We know we should be sleeping earlier. We know we should be working out. We know we should lose 5 pounds, but we don't do it because our system maintains us, and in order for us to make a change, we have to shift something in our system, and we're not comfortable doing that. Because change comes from a belief level. We're always trying to change it from a behavior level. Okay? So there's always a system in place, and part of it is unconscious. One of the problems we've always had with sales is that we assume because we see the problem and our product can resolve it, that there's going to be a fit. And when we gather data, David Sandler, who is an old friend of mine, once said, buyers are liars. And it's not that they lie, although sometimes if a salesperson is pushing them hard enough, they end up lying because they're just annoyed. But there's this unconscious thing going on within the system that's keeping the status quo in place and would need to be managed, addressed, challenged in some way if something new were to happen. Interestingly, when the seller says, I'll call you back, where do they go? Most salespeople at least agree that they don't know. I've heard one guy say, I know. And I go, really? You know where they go? You must work with them. No, but I've seen it before. Ah, so all of your clients have the same internal working and the same internal rules and policies and people issues. There's all of these internal issues that go on that are hidden, and they take place every day by rote. Until the buyer manages all of these issues, all of them, no change will happen. So the time it takes the buyer to come up with their own answers is the length of the sales cycle.
Mm-hmm.
That's where buyers go when they say, I'll call you back. Because when the rubber hits the road, they have to make sure that all the people buy in, that the policies buy in, that the initiatives buy in, that the old vendor issues are resolved. They have work to do before they buy you, and it's not about our product. That's why I think that sales has done the world a disservice by focusing merely on the problem and the product when the entire system that has created and maintained the problem that we see is just not addressed at all. The system has to be okay with the solution. You're not going to be walking down a street and see this fabulous house that you love and then walk in and give them a check and say, I'll be back with my wife, we're moving tomorrow, we love the house. You would never do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a system behind you and your finances and your wife and your neighborhood and your kids and your school. It's not about the house.
I'm still struggling with the people from Unisys and the bank. Because if they had such what appeared to be an obviously good relationship and they were very senior people and they had a very compelling financial case, you know, the bank was losing $1 billion, well, when they went to the CEO and asked him what was holding up the decision, what kind of answers was he giving them?
There were always initiatives that had to be managed. There was this initiative we were going to do for 6 months, and once we do that, then we'll be in a better place to bring in the electronic banking solution, and we have a new tech head coming in. They were all wonderful reasons. They needed this new tech guy to come and take over first, and then they were getting other software that they had to make sure was going to fit in. I mean, they all made sense. Everything made sense. It was just dragging on.
And so how is it that even the CEO didn't really have a grasp for the union problem?
Because it was the problem from the CEO before him, and he never delved into it. He just kind of left it sitting there figuring it would resolve itself, and he didn't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the CEO of one of the world's largest banks. We're not talking about a stupid person here.
No, of course. And yet, apparently, this application that he was considering would have somehow impacted that union issue?
Oh, yes. It had to do with the people issue. They were going to have to fire some people and get rid of people and move people around, and the union didn't want those people having that problem.
Okay, so you've got a process, then, that helps people get into these issues that maybe even the prospect is not consciously aware of.
Oh, for sure the prospect isn't consciously aware.
Very good.
What I've done, actually, is I've coded the way brains decide at a systems level.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that has to be done, sounds so simple, but it's one of the hardest things, is recognize where you're at. Where are you? You can't ask a client that because they'll talk about the problem that they have. But this CEO didn't know where he was at. We're always looking at the leaf. We can't see the whole forest.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that my model does is it teaches the buyer how to see the entire forest. Because there might be a fire going on up the road, and if you're looking at the leaf, you can't see it. One of the problems with large-scale implementations is that they're so busy placing the software that they don't recognize the system that it sits within. I was just talking to somebody who was talking to me about hiring me for a CLO job for a very large, the largest software company in the world, and they've never had a sales university or sales training department with over 15,000 salespeople worldwide. And when I talked to them about the resistance that they were going to get from the field, who have had no oversight ever, ever, they said there wouldn't be any. Okay? And they fought with me about it. And they said, well, the board is going to be behind the effort. Why would there be resistance in the field? And I said, do you have any idea what they're doing for sales training now? They had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But they knew that 60% of it worked. And I said, which 60%?
Mm-hmm.
They had no idea. These are not stupid. This is the largest software company in the world.
Mm-hmm.
This is the board. They didn't understand the system going out amongst 57,000 people in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Or however many, making up numbers at this point, kind of.
Right.
So we just keep doing what we're doing, just like with our 5 pounds and just like with our not working out. There is a way through to the decision-making issues that we have kept unconscious. What I've done is I've also created this form of question that teaches the brain how to kind of smush together different criteria that it wouldn't ordinarily get to on its own, but they'd need to get to it anyway if they were going to make a decision. That's the length of the sales cycle. I came up with one of my facilitative questions to use for this economy.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. as a takeaway, so you can hear what this question does, different from conventional questions that just pull data. Because at the moment, what salespeople are doing is they are asking questions that they want to know about so they can do a good pitch. So they have a biased intent, they ask biased questions, and then they get biased answers.
Mm-hmm.
And they miss all the important pieces because it's all really basically about the product sale. And that stuff is very vital and very necessary, but not to help the buyer decide. That doesn't help the buyer decide. Your pushing a product and show them how it fits does not help the buyer decide because they have this decision team. Even when you have a small personal item, I was doing work with Clinique and teaching the counter women to sell a lipstick and a mascara, not just a lipstick. The woman has to make a decision as to whether she's going to get new mascara there or go to her regular cosmetician to the next counter. That's a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And she's always bought, I'm making this up, Lancome, and she only gets Clinique eyeshadow. Well, she has to make a new decision to do something else. It's not about how good one product is over another. And it's also about smaller sales. I didn't finish that from before. If you have to buy a computer, do you give it to the old person or the new person? Do they sit with the old team or the new user? Do you get them a new chair or the old person a new chair or give the new person the old chair? There's all kinds of internal decisions that need to get made separate from the product or the solution. Okay, let me give you this little takeaway that you can take a look at,
mm-hmm.
and it'll help you understand more about my model. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
What would you need to recognize about your business needs to know you can maintain your outcomes and goals through a fluctuating economy? You like that?
Could you repeat it?
Sure. What would you need to recognize about your business needs to know that you can maintain your outcomes and goals through a fluctuating economy?
I'm writing it down furiously.
I'll say it again. What would you need to recognize? And in business needs, it could be about your computer needs. It could be about your staffing needs. What would you need to recognize about your business needs to know you can maintain your outcomes and goals through a fluctuating economy? So what I've done with that question is I've brought together, I've highlighted the need. I have shown them how to think about maintaining. I use the word maintain carefully.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can still stay on track and recognize the economy and begin to look at, I use the word recognize carefully. What would you recognize about your business needs? So that question teaches them how to pull apart what might look like a big lump of a problem, pull it apart into pieces, and take different aspects for different times and different decisions and different issues based on the economy, the decision team, other things that they're doing. This teaches them how to pull apart what appears to be their problem or need so they can make a new decision where and if necessary.
Yeah, when you sit down and really closely read that question and think about its various parts, you realize that if you get a simple off-the-cuff answer, whoever it is you're talking to didn't understand the question.
That's a very astute comment, Alan, because I just threw that question out on its own. Buying facilitation actually goes through the brain processes of the system of decision-making, one little piece at a time. One of the problems with sales is that sales comes in at the very last point that they need to be managing, the solution, and doesn't take into account the entire decision-making process that they and their decision team have to get to. So when you start at the beginning of the process, of the cycle, of the decisioning phase, you meld in each aspect one thing at a time, and you actually teach the buyer how to make a decision. I was called by one of the, then it was Big Five, now I guess it's Big Three, and the senior partner was in charge of the training, and he said, your stuff intuitively makes sense. We have a 3-year sales cycle, which indeed we brought a $50 million product from a 3-year sales cycle to a 4-month buy, just like IBM. We went from a 6-month sales cycle on a $5,000 product to a 2-call close. Mm-hmm. The time it takes buyers to come up with their own answer is the length of the sales cycle, and this is a very different type of model than sales is, so we have different sorts of numbers. But the training guy called me, the senior partner called me, and I said, so you've got a very long sales cycle now. How have you been going about closing this, and what's your process? So he told me, and I said, what's stopping it from working? And, well, it takes so long. And I said, so what has stopped you until now from trying different models of selling to get a different result? And he said he didn't have the answer. So I said, great. Call me back when you do. And I hung up. Because I have nothing to sell if they have nothing to buy.
Right.
So he called me back with two other people on the phone, and he had the answer. He knew what had stopped them. And then so I started going down my model, and another three questions in, the three of them didn't have the answer. So I said, great, call me back when you have the answer to that. Within 2 months, there were 15 people on the phone, 7 o'clock in the morning, internationally, and they still didn't have answers. And one of the guys said, Steve, what is she selling us? And Steve said, I have no idea, because all she does is ask me these questions, and I don't never have any answers, and she hasn't given me a pitch. And the guy said, well, how are we supposed to decide anything if she's not pitching? And this is in front of me. It was so funny. And Steve turned to Steve on the phone and said, if you don't give us a pitch right now, I'm going to hang up the phone and not use you. And I said, okay, I'll give you a pitch, but the reason I haven't pitched is because if you can't figure out how to decide on those things, I'm pitching into the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I have a great product and I'm brilliant doesn't mean you all know how to buy it. But look, I have the whole decision team on the phone. I have the whole global decision team. I haven't pitched you a thing, and I managed to get the whole decision team on the phone because you needed to come up with your own answers. And they didn't know what the questions were.
Mm-hmm.
So when I pose the correct questions, see, they get to it eventually through trial and error. You know, it's like a pinata. You get to it. You get to it eventually. But I take the blindfold off, and I say, here's what you have to look at. And the biggest challenge for the salespeople that I train in corporations is that they have to give up the notion that at that phase that they need to understand, that they need to sell the product. You're really in control here. Sales, you're only in control of your product and what looks like a solution around your product. Sales has no control over where buyers go when they have to make a buying decision.
Mm-hmm.
They sit there and they scratch their nose, you know? But I teach the buyer how to recognize and manage all of the internal issues that they need to address before they're going to make a buying decision. So when you have an economic downturn, you have more people on this decision team. You have to have greater flexibility with the types of solutions that you're going to come up with. I mean, you're going to be using internal solutions more often than you are going to be using vendor solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So do you take people out of one group and put them in another, what happens to the work over there? Okay? Maybe you take an old vendor that you didn't like but is cheaper that'll give you a partial solution for now. They have to figure this out. Doing nothing could be an option, but they need to know what the costs are. Are there people costs? What are the long-term costs? It might be that the costs are less to pay the money and do it now. But because they're fearful of deciding and everyone on the decision team is afraid to decide, no decision gets made, so the status quo holds. But if the decision team can see the costs are too high, their job is to do the best for the company. They have money sitting there, unless they're a small independent person, which is different, especially B2B. They have money. They're just afraid to spend it now because they don't know what's going to be in the future. But maybe it's going to be worse in the future. The decision team is the one that decides, not the fact that you've got a great product and they have a need. That's no longer the issue.
I'm nodding. I guess that doesn't really make much impact on the telephone, does it?
No.
So now we've probably got a whole bunch of people that are listening that are salivating about, okay, well, how do I learn this process? What's the answer to that question?
There are a few ways. The first thing they need to do, I suspect, is go on to my product site. That's buyingfacilitation.com.
Mm-hmm.
I have an ebook called Buying Facilitation, The New Way to Sell. It's $20. It's a bargain. It's 83 pages only because I took 150 pages and my editor squished me and squished my head until we got 83 pages out of it so it could be printed off since it's an ebook. That book talks about the model and explains every aspect of the decision phase. It does not teach how to formulate the questions or the presumptive summaries because I couldn't teach that in a book.
Mm-hmm.
People get lulled into thinking because it's so exciting that they can use it. And then I get these calls saying, but you're not teaching me how to do it. I go, right. I can't do that. So I have guided study sessions that people can do over the course of a year. There's one every other week for a year that they can study on their own. It's nasty. It's brutal. It takes 3 or 4 hours of homework for each one, but you learn a lot. I can come into an organization. This December, I have a semi-public training. I haven't run a public training for 5 years. I'm running it with a client. But ordinarily, I don't run public trainings. But I do come in and teach. I do individual coaching or team coaching. So there's lots of ways to learn it. But the first thing to do is either buy the ebook or I have a product called Buying Facilitation in a Box, which is a 3-CD series where there's the whole ebook. There's my last book, Selling with Integrity. And there's lots and lots and lots of homework. There's 50 articles. There's steps and models and games and tests and whatever else on there so that you can do some learning on your own there as well and then maybe call me for coaching. So there's ways to learn, and I can even license people so they can train it to their teams.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of ways to learn it. It's very exciting. It's been challenging for me to get salespeople to understand the difference between their wonderful product and their wonderful attitude and their wonderful professionalism and the client's real need and the fact that the buyer really has to go back and figure out how to make the decisions that they need to make internally to bring in something new. And you can't do that after, you have to do it before. I remember once somebody called me back and I said, you didn't call me for a week. That's not like you. Are you okay? And he said, yeah, we just got this big RFP from Boeing or some Xerox or something big. And he said, they've been working with this other company for all these years and this is the first time we've ever gotten this from them. And we've all been getting together this week to create the best proposal. And I said, well, if they've been using that other company for all these years, why aren't they using them again?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think in systems, not just about this wonderful product that they have. So the guy said, I'll call you back. So he called Boeing or whoever it was, and why are you not using them this time, the competitor? And they said, we are using them this time. We just needed a second bid.
Mm-hmm.
It happens all the time. So what we did was we threw away 5 senior partners, a week's worth of man hours, I don't know, $1 million, whatever, and we created 2 pages of facilitative questions. How would you know when you were on track versus when you were off track? At what point would you be seeking a managerial solution because the users were doing X? We had them look at the system to recognize when it was working, when it wouldn't be working, when they needed new help, when they needed external support, when the managers from another department had to be brought in. 2 pages of facilitative questions. And they called my client back and said, these are really interesting questions. are they ours to keep? Can we give them to your competitor? And my client was not happy but said, what were they going to do, right? So they said, sure. 6 weeks later, they got a call back. They fired the competitor and said they weren't dealing with any of these, and we realized these are the core questions. Would you please come in and do the job?
Wow.
The client wants what's best.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can help the client, whether it's in this economy or a booming economy, if you can help the client come up with their own best answers of how to recognize and address all of the elements that need to be managed so that when they make a purchase or a change, they come up without disruption, you're going to be on their sales team. They will ask you to write the RFP for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even recommend you, by the way, doing too many, answering too many of those unless you wrote them. And you can ask these questions beforehand and get them to let you write them. I've seen this happen dozens of times. You can use this with the gatekeeper. So I would make a call saying to a gatekeeper, how are you currently introducing new skills to the current ones you're offering your salespeople? That's a question that I use all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten business from that.
Of course.
Because the gatekeeper, I had one gatekeeper call me back and she said, I gave all that material to this guy and they fired him. And when they fired him, he took your stuff with him. Will you please send me another packet? And then I got a call a week later from this guy. He said, I am Joe Williams. I'm from this company. And he said, I don't know who you are, but that receptionist, who's the receptionist? That receptionist is on my case every day to call you. And she said, you're great. I don't know how you know her, but I'm calling you. Just call her back and tell her I called you, okay? So you get rabid fans. I use it with gatekeepers because the job of a gatekeeper is not just to keep you out. It's to let the right people in. How do they choose the right people to use their guy's time?
Mm-hmm.
That's part of their job. And when you use this, you don't get objections. Because when you say something like, given that our products are similar to a lot of other products, how would you know to choose one of us over another since we're so similar?
Mm-hmm.
They have to do that anyway. They're going to do it with you or without you. So when they start thinking about it, if they say, well, price, okay, so I hear that price is your number one criterion. Oh, actually, no, we want to make sure we have the best fit. So I hear that if you have a good fit and it's a good solution and the product isn't the lowest, that you would still consider using that vendor. Yes, I would. So you help them determine the criteria they have to come up with anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no money objections, and there's no gatekeeper issues, and there's no closing issues because you teach them how to close.
Internally.
Internally.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear you saying that when you and the COO get together and you figure out X, that you'll know how to bring in a vendor. That's a presumptive summary. I'm wondering how you would like me to be involved in the process in the meantime so that I could best support you as you go through this process with her.
Very good.
They bring you in to the decision team. It's not sales, Alan. It can't be compared with sales. It sits on top of sales. Does that make sense?
Sure. It makes perfect sense.
Oh, good. It's just that no one's ever done it before. It's been 25 long years, I have to tell you.
It's hard to blaze a trail.
I know, but I have it now, honey. So after, I have a lot to teach if people want to learn it.
Well, I think that's terrific. And the information that you've shared today is definitely a different take on an aspect of selling that I'm sure most of us had never considered. Do you have any final thoughts you want to put on the table as we wrap this up?
Yes. Number one, when sellers don't close, it's not because of them or the product or even the buyer. It's because the sales model has not given seller the tools to teach the buyer how to make the necessary decisions. Number two, at the point that the seller can truly serve the buyer, I call it a servant leader, ethical, values-based model, can truly serve the buyer, and coming up with their own best answers, they'll be able to close at least 30% more, at least, because you will find, I was working with a bank, and some small business bankers would call and say, hi, I'm going to be in your neighborhood to show you some new product. Would you mind me stopping by next Tuesday? And they learned how to say, hi, my name is, I'm with such bank. How are you currently bringing in new banking resources when the ones you have aren't going to be enough for future needs?
Mm-hmm.
They went from 90% no to 60% no.
Mm-hmm.
People said, oh, because now I was teaching them how to decide to choose me, not deciding to make an appointment. Okay, I only suggest that people go to the field once the whole buying decision team is there and not use their body as a prospecting tool.
It makes perfect sense.
And number three, time it takes buyers to come up with their own answers to the length of the sales cycle. Help them decide first, and then only pitch your product in the terms that the buyer's decision necessitates. So stop basing the whole sale on you and your product. Even though you say, oh, no, I really care about my customers, you're still basing your sale on placing product. Truly serve them and help them discover their own answers. Be a servant leader to them. Get on their buying decision team, and you'll close at least 300 to 800% more sales than you did before.
Terrific. Sharon Drew, thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan.
So long.
Bye.
To all of the folks on the call, all of the teleseminars in the How to Increase Sales During an Economic Downturn series have been recorded in advance. This was done for the convenience of the very busy experts who have so graciously agreed to participate in the series. Recording the calls in advance enabled us to gain access to people who might not otherwise have been available. Unfortunately, it also eliminates your opportunity to ask live questions of the experts. So, we have created an alternative way for you to ask questions. If you go to the 8020 Sales Leader website, that's www.8020saleslader.com, you will see there is a discussion forum. If you sign up for a free 60-day membership to the website, you will be able to post questions in the forum. I will create a separate forum thread for each expert who participates in the teleseminar series. If you have a question for a specific expert, please post your question to that thread in the forum. I will collect the questions, ask for answers from the appropriate experts, and post their answers in the forum. Thank you again for joining us for tonight's call. I hope you found the content to be truly helpful. Until next time, this is Alan Rigg offering you my best wishes for sales success. Good night.